Okay, here we are, Wade Northousen from Billboard Battalion. We did a bit of a promo today. We said we were kicking off about 12 o'clock. However, things have evolved and it's now a bit later than that. So anyway, we're here today with Rabbi Leon.
I'm not a rabbi, but yeah.
We'll run with rabbi. It sounds good, I thought. Anyway, so Leon Kovmansky here is talking. And Leon is one of the people in the Jewish community in Melbourne. And as I said earlier on with the promo, Billboard Battalion, myself, we haven't really touched the Israel issue with what's happened with the attack on Israel and coming from Palestine. And so now I think it's a good time to do that because we've got a lot of other things that we've been talking about out of the way. And just to preface things, Leon, you know, we've discussed, and I met you, 6 months ago through a mutual friend.
That's right.
And it was very, very good to be able to catch up because I originally started trying and catch up with some of the people from the Jewish community with regard to what was going on with COVID. And what I saw was effectively the beginning of the Holocaust too, with the COVID stuff. And I thought, internationally, what other group of people have more credibility to talk to that issue or to run with that than the Jewish community? Because what we're seeing again, as I said, Holocaust too, all the COVID, all the vaccines. So we really, really needed to get those people going. And it was very difficult to find anybody from the Jewish community who would actually speak. So coming on further down the track now, we're seeing, I've met a number of people, which is really good, and got to know some people from the Jewish community. And now we've got the attack that happened on Israel. And it's really great to speak to you because you know people on the ground in Israel and other friends that I know who are Israeli or Israeli origins, and they've still got friends and family who live there, very, very close proximity to the zones. And very tied up with what's happening. And we're starting to see what is very concerning to me is an international polarization of two sides.
Exactly.
That is being artificially created. It is being deliberately created. And I think this is incredibly worrying. And if we look at things through the lens of logic and common sense, and rationality and basic assessment, an assessment of the facts that happened on that day of the attack. To me, to look things from a military perspective, this is very, very wrong. Things do not add up, they don't make sense, and the narrative that we're being told worldwide is garbage. It is wrong, and I think that we need to explore that so that people can get a perspective that I believe is the true perspective. So I'm very, very glad to speak to you today. You know a lot about this subject, and so therefore, I'd like to throw it open to you to, make an opening statement, if you like, or what you believe or what you think, and, hear what your opinions are about this.
Sure.
So people can maybe just stop for a second and go, well, I didn't realise these things. And you have examples of people on the ground there. Mm-hmm. You have examples and information of responses that never happened, that should have happened. And, I'll just throw it open
there
and hear what your thoughts are on that, Leon. I'd be very, very glad to hear that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on your podcast, Wade. It's an honour and a pleasure to be here. So, from the outset, I suspect that there's something is not right with the official narrative of what happened there. So it's supposedly the most secure, well, it is the most secure border in the world. They've got high-tech technology. They know if a bug or a little insect crosses, they'll know straight away, they can detect it. Leading up to the attack, in the months, maybe even years leading up to the attack, the place was heavily monitored. So usually by IDF, female soldiers that would sit in like these monitoring rooms and that would monitor the border remotely, and this was published in the Israel National News, by the way. So it's like a right-wing news outlet in Israel. It's an English-speaking website. And so for a while, they've been noticing unusual activity at the border with Hamas doing all kinds of strange and unusual things, training. There was doing a lot of reconnaissance work. There were a lot of new faces there, a lot of people popping up and down and inspecting the fence. And they were trying to warn their superiors of this unusual activity. And each time they were threatened, they were told to shut up or they would be court-martialed.
Wow.
And it took, 6 hours for the...
So, sorry, just to... They were threatened to be court-martialed...
By their superiors.
From this is Israeli military or government or...
Military.
So they're threatened to be court-martialed for doing their job.
Exactly.
That's the nuts and bolts of it.
That's
okay,
right.
Sorry, go on.
No, that's okay. It took the Israeli military... the Air Force up to 6 hours to respond to the Hamas attack. So the Hamas terrorists were given free rein. They they crossed the fence. They used bulldozers, tractors, and they went on a rampage across all the border towns for up to six hours unopposed, basically. And I did an interview with a gentleman called Jonathan Pollard. He's a very famous spy who spent decades in a U.S. prison for handing Israeli U.S. Intelligence to Israel. But this was American intelligence that America was supposed to give to Israel under a treaty that they had with Israel.
Yep.
So when I interviewed him, he told me that he knew of helicopter pilots, or at least one helicopter pilot, who was sitting in the cockpit ready to be deployed to the border fence, waiting for his orders. He was sitting there for 6 hours, and his friends that were living on the border towns were calling him up, saying, "We're being killed, our children are being massacred, when are you going to come?"
Personal phone calls.
Yeah,
yes.
Personal phone calls, text messages.
And just to set it, he's sitting in the cockpit of a fully armed attack helicopter.
That's right, waiting for an order to go, and he was told not to... He wasn't deployed. And they knew that all this stuff was happening in the border towns, and there was no order for them to go and counter this attack. Also, the hostages, some of the hostages, you could see footages of them being taken off to Gaza in golf buggies. I mean, that's how fast does a golf buggy go? I mean, it's ridiculous. And tractors.
Yes, yes.
They could have been easily intercepted. So obviously something was very wrong. If you were... I believe the official narrative would mean that the Israelis were totally and utterly incompetent, which is kind of scarier in a way, if one were to believe that official narrative. But it's too stupid to be stupid. Something was clearly up. The thing is, the state of Israel has always had treasonous elements operating within it, in the highest echelons of the military and the government. As we had a discussion yesterday about this, clearly, you know, both sides, they both on the Israeli side and the Arab side and the Iranian side, the people in the highest echelons are involved with the World Economic Forum. So there is something going on in the background there at the highest levels that clearly doesn't get reported in the news.
Yes.
But when you look at what's transpired, and if you look at the official narrative, and you examine it, you would automatically, any reasonable, logical person would see that there's a lot of holes in the official narrative.
The official narrative, sadly, that we see with a lot of things going on in the world, there are certainly holes in it. And... this is one of the things that I really wanted to focus on, and I'm glad that you can cite these examples from people you know who are actually there. And just my overview of things right from the start, when we started hearing about this stuff, were, so you've got Israeli intelligence, which is continually told to us is the best in the world.
Mm.
You've got the most heaviest guarded border in the world by a country where the entire population is the army,
That's right.
Is the military. You know, like the entire population is the armed forces. So
reservists.
So we've set that scene. So here's the deal. If I don't know if they scramble the Israeli Air Force, I'm presuming like the joint's not that big. It's not a bigger country. It's reasonably small.
Give your audience some perspective. It's 5 times smaller than the state of Victoria, the second smallest state in Australia. That's how small it is. That's Israel, Gaza, and the West Bank combined.
Wow. Okay.
It's tiny. It's a tiny country.
So what population? What population of people are in this area? Who live there? What how many people?
So you've got it's a total population of around 9, I'd say maybe 10 million if you were to include Gaza. So there's about 6 million Jews, and then I would say 1.5 million Arabs living inside Israel itself, what's known as Israel proper. I think you've got another million or so Arabs, maybe 1.5 million maybe in the West Bank, and then another 2 million in Gaza,
right,
living in Gaza. And then you've also got a large population of Christians and other ethnicities that live all across Israel.
So, I mean, despite what we're told, it seems like a fairly multicultural, diverse kind of an area in real terms.
Mm.
So where we've got, you know, we're told, we've got the Jews over here and the Palestinians there, and it's just, there's just a war, constant aggression or whatever. speaking to some of the Jewish people that I've got to know in the last year or so, I'm getting a totally different perspective, in so much as there's Palestinians who combine with the Jews all the time, and they have really, really great working relationship, a great community, a camaraderie, if you like.
That's right.
And so, you know, the things that we're led to believe are not really the case, and that, as I see it and my interpretation, is that what's happened here is deliberately designed to draw a wedge between all that and create conflict.
That's right.
And I mean that...
Absolutely.
From what you've described, a very small country, and the Israeli military is known for being an incredibly powerful military by world standards. So if I'm to understand this, you've got just one aspect. You've got Israeli Air Force, who... I don't know, worldwide I think they can scramble jets to operational fighter status and in the air in 15 minutes.
That's right.
Any sort of air force in the world, they can scramble.
Talking about a small piece of land, exactly.
So a jet, you know, like a jet fighter's what, could be cruising at Mach 1.5, Mach 2.
Mm.
And, you know, so you should be able to get from wherever you take off, 15 minutes, wheels up, you're airborne, and you're to any site in Israel in 10 minutes.
Yeah, maybe even less. An area that's much smaller than the state of Victoria.
So that's what we're dealing with. And you would have ground troops deployable in the same time and arguably live within 10 minutes of the place.
That's right.
Of this attack zone. So that's this side.
I also want to mention that the Israeli population that lived around that area, which is called the Gaza Belt, they were all disarmed of their weapons in 2020.
Okay, so let's just have a look at that, because historically, and I love
Israeli
my history.
Israeli civilians, yeah.
I love my history. Mm. And if you go back to many, many things that have happened in history, and no other better example exists than the Nazis and you know, Poland and these sort of countries. And you listen to the people from back then who have either, you know, left recordings or this, you know, whatever. They say they disarmed the population. And it seems to me that historically, when a government starts to disarm the population, it's because they want to kill them.
That's right.
And
yes.
I mean, I don't want to put too fine a point on that, but you have to. Because these turn out to be, this is the facts. So this region, the Israeli government have disarmed the population.
Exactly. Around the Gaza Belt, the civilians, they took their weapons away.
So if that had not have happened, if the government had not disarmed the population, what would have been their capacity to defend themselves against this attack?
It would have been mitigated. I mean, I don't know by how much. I think it would have made a big difference.
So what kind of weapons did they have? And this is stuff in their homes, I'm presuming?
Yeah, look, they would have had, you know, M16s is quite common, pistols, machine guns, those type of rifles.
Yep.
So...
And, okay, so a lot of other countries come to mind where, you know, people are looking at you know, they're heavily armed in their own houses and all that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I'm keeping that in mind, but we won't touch on that in a minute. So the point I'm making is we've got basically Israel, just the military, has the capacity to turn up en masse on this attack within 15 minutes and strike.
And maybe even less, arguably.
I mean, so let's look at the attack itself. You've got people who went through this war with dozers, excavators,
pickup trucks, utes,
this kind of thing. And let's look at the Palestinian Air Force, the air attack on Israel that took down the Israeli Air Force. Okay, the air attack was
paragliders.
A bunch of blokes with an AR-15 or whatever, AK-47 on the back. They flew across the fence on a glorified lawnmower with a fan on the back.
That's right.
And they took down the Israeli Air Force.
The thing is, the Israeli Air Force wasn't anywhere to be seen.
Which is my whole point. I'm being a little bit sarcastic just to prove the point. Because, like, one Apache or two or three Apaches or something like that would have just taken the whole force out.
That's right.
They would have fixed this problem immediately. But as I understand, the Israeli Air Force were ordered to stand down.
Yes, and I want to give you viewers some context. Just a theory. It's a credible theory, though. The Israeli Air Force, all of Israel's major institutions have always been controlled by the far left in Israel, traditionally, including the Air Force, the courts and the military. And even though we've had a so-called right-wing government in Israel for over a decade with Bibi Netanyahu in charge, leading up to this attack, there was a lot of internal division within Israel, a lot of protests, because Netanyahu, who's not really a political idol, he would just do anything to stay in power. But he was doing it more because he had a right-wing coalition, he had other right-wing parties that were pressuring to do it. He wanted to curb the power of the left. And one thing that he did was pass legislation that curbed the power of the Israeli Supreme Court, which is controlled by radical leftist judges who would always interfere in the Israeli government. And because he was trying to do that, there were mass protests organized by the radical left, led by a character called Ehud Barak. Ehud Barak is a former Israeli prime minister. He served from 1998 to 2000.
Yes.
He was a very close friend of Jeffrey Epstein, very dubious character. There's actually footage or pictures of him trying to sneak into Epstein's apartment going back a few years ago. A really nasty piece of work, far leftist.
Yep.
So he's one of Netanyahu's chief rivals. And he organized a lot of the civil unrest. And during that time, the Air Force, which again is controlled by the left, went on strike. They said that if Netanyahu give us any orders, we'll refuse to carry it out. So fast forward to October 7th, where was the Air Force? Nowhere to be found. Now Netanyahu, he's no saint. I'm not trying to cast him. He's not a very dubious character. You could see he showed his true colors during the COVID pandemic when he happily sold the entire Jewish population of Israel to a medical experiment. The Arabs, by the way, were mostly exempt from the experiment. It was the Jews that they sold, that they gave over to the WHO and to the World Economic Forum.
Sorry to interrupt, but that was one of the major problems that I had going back to when I first started to try and look to find some Jewish people to talk to about this, because I thought, we've got this stuff that they're injecting into people. If you look at the people who are pushing that, you're seeing the exact duplication of what happened in World War II.
Yeah, Mengele.
It's the same people. They're doing the same thing. And I could not understand for the life of me why the Jewish leadership would have Israel the highest injected population in the world. And I thought, why is the leadership trying to kill their own people, you know, based using the weapons of the same people who
right.
were trying to kill them in 1940? So sorry to
that's okay.
But I just wanted to make that point.
That's right.
Because that's why the reason I originally got involved in all this sort of stuff. So, and now you've mentioned that, and I think this speaks volumes. I think this is something we need to touch on in the near future. But, yeah, please continue.
That's okay. Yeah, look, the Australian government is supposedly representing the Australian people, representing the interests, but they're, as you know, they're too happy to kill their own population. So, unfortunately, the government of Israel is not much different. They all report to the same group, the World Economic Forum,
yep.
and higher than that.
Yep.
With Bibi Netanyahu, what I suspect may have happened was this was basically a coup, not just against the people of Israel, but more so a coup against Netanyahu, perhaps to undermine him. And it was led by this guy called Ehud Barak. So whether Bibi or Netanyahu was involved in it or himself directly, whether he had any knowledge, I'm not sure. I wouldn't be surprised, though, given his conduct during the whole COVID scandemic.
So I'm really, really glad that you've pointed all that out, because that gives us a ground map of what we're dealing with. Because you don't hear this stuff in the mainstream media. You certainly are not going to hear it from any, credible news source. Mm. But this is the stuff that is crucial for people to know, to understand, because, as I said, we've got people who are taking sides now.
That's right.
Not only internationally, not only countries who are saying, oh, we stand with Israel, or we stand with Palestine, and all this sort of stuff. We're getting this polarization and very dangerous situation
exactly.
happening even in our own country, in our own states, in our own cities, and this is so dangerous. And what I want to point out with this entire interview is that is wrong. Okay, I know Muslim people too.
Mm.
Yeah, I know Jewish people. And some of them are good and some of them are bad. It's exactly the same as any other race, Australians, I don't care whoever you are. There's good and bad in everyone's.
That's right.
And we don't want to see a situation where we've got wars going on in our own streets.
Mm.
And where we have what we saw in Melbourne here.
Situation in Caulfield.
Yeah, and hell no, that is not cool. That is not on.
That's right.
And a part of the deal here today is I want people to come away from this interview with a new knowledge base on what the actual issue is. The fact that we don't want Arabs fighting against Jews. We don't want wars in our streets. We don't want
exactly.
people down there going in Sydney, you know, gas the Jews, kill the Jews, and all this stuff. We want people to understand that the real war here is the people of all of our religions or races against the world elites.
That's right.
Because they are the ones who are our enemies. And we need to come together and as a common and fight them. Because they are the problem. The
That's
World
right.
Economic Forum,
mm.
the United Nations, and the World Health Organization. They're what I call the three TOs. The three terrorist organisations, because they are the terrorists. And what we're seeing now in the world is enormous. We're seeing them taking control of so much that gives them the power to kill you.
Mm.
And that's their deal. And that's where we're going with this. So with that in perspective, I just wanted to go back to the analogies that we're talking about, so long as you're comfortable to talk about that. And when I say analogies, actually the facts. Sorry, I'm... That's not quite right. It's the facts. So the facts are, we've got the entire Israeli military is sitting on the ground, never get to fire a shot, never get the clearance to defend their people.
As they're being slaughtered, that's right.
So where we're seeing the narrative is that we've got all these terrible terrorists coming out of Palestine, out of Gaza. They've come across there and... There's no need to rehash the graphics of the atrocities that happened.
Mm.
We all know what happened. We all know of the shocking, terrible things that occurred. And then they took all these hostages.
Women, children, elderly,
yeah,
across.
Yes. And they've loaded them up on what? Golf buggies and utes.
Tractors and utes, yeah.
And they've freely been able to just cart them off back
to in broad daylight.
In broad daylight. And this was happening over a period of how many hours?
Over 6 hours, maybe up to 8 hours.
So the lawnmower egg beater brigade fly over in their lawnmower and grab a heap of people, massacre the whole joint, and then just cart them off 6 hours, and the most heavily guarded fence in the world, one of the best militaries in the world, arguably, can get there in a matter of 15 minutes, nothing. They don't fire a damn shot, nothing. So, we have to sit there and say, what's wrong with this picture?
Yep.
I think that there's a hell of a lot wrong with this picture. So, let's throw up what I believe is the situation.
Mm.
We've had the Israeli leadership of some description, whether it's the military, whether it's the government, whether it's the lefties, whether it's whatever, have worked together with, probably, Iran.
And Hamas, yep, they coordinated. Because those Hamas fighters, when if you watch the videos, they were all, a lot of them were very relaxed, and they knew that they had time to carry out what they needed to do.
And to just put a point on that, so even if, let's just say, the Israeli world's class surveillance and intelligence group, these people were live streaming this.
That's right, the Hamas terrorists were live streaming it.
I mean,
they're wearing body cams.
For like, these people were live streaming this.
Mm.
So everything is wrong. So let's look at this as the situation. Israeli leadership and military leadership worked together with Iranian leadership and Hamas as a group. They got together and they put this whole attack together. And then we had the Palestinians did the attack. The Iranians made sure they were allowed to do the attack.
Mm.
Right? And I think this is the dynamic we need to be looking at. Because, and as per usual, you get people say, oh, why would they do that? Okay, here's the deal. These people are all part of the United Nations. These states are all member states of the United Nations. They are all members of the World Economic Forum. This is your problem. Exactly the same as you look at Putin and Zelensky. They're all affiliated with the UN and the WEF. The wars that happen are designed to happen. They're all planned a long time beforehand. And the leaders of these countries are not leaders of these countries. They are traitors. And they are deliberately in the business of creating these wars between people. They are. They're absolute. That's exactly what they are. I mean, you look at Putin, and we don't want to distract from the Middle East at the minute we're talking about. But Putin is a young global leader. One of Klaus Schwab's proudest creations.
Mm.
So if we rise up from the secular, specifically designed narrative that makes us fight each other, and we start to understand that these leaders are the ones who have deliberately orchestrated this, they've deliberately created it, and they've done this right through history. Go back to World War II, World War I, same deal.
Yep.
So, we need to understand that when we see the people, Jewish people, people throughout the rest of the world, who look at these atrocities and they hate the people that did them, the actual people on the ground, justifiably so too, but we have to get the Israeli people to understand your leadership are the ones who are responsible for those atrocities.
And you know what? There's a lot of Israelis are aware of this. And there's a lot of anger in Israel. And the official response is, well, let's wait till after the war's over. we need to be all united. That's the official response. But a lot of Israelis are very, there's a lot of anger. And there's an expectation that a lot of heads will roll. They want Bibi to resign. I mean, we'll see what happens. But I just also want to say that with everything that's happened, you know, like it's obviously, as you mentioned, the situation is very polarized, and people that are looking from the outside in the West are all taking sides, and everyone's distracted. No one's talking about sudden deaths, excess deaths. Everyone's forgotten about what's happening with COVID. Something similar happened with Ukraine as well. But what surprised me as well is there are certain people in the freedom movement. Thankfully, look, it's not the majority, but there are quite a few influential people in the freedom movement that have taken a side. And they've sided with the Palestinians, with Gaza. And that kind of surprises me because, you know, these people claim to be patriotic. They present themselves as patriotic. But when pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas activists vandalize Anzac memorials, one was vandalized in Montrose a few weeks back in Victoria, in Melbourne, suburban Melbourne. And it wasn't an isolated case. War memorials were vandalized in the UK, in Canada, in the United States. Veterans Day ceremonies were hijacked in London and Canada as well by pro-Palestinian activists.
Yeah.
And in response, these certain individuals, influential individuals within the in the freedom movement, both in Australia and overseas, are silent. They don't have anything to say in relation to that. And that just that surprises me.
Well, it's pretty scary when you look at orchestrated things just distract from. And I mean, one of the things that really stuck out to me was when we were seeing what was going on in Hong Kong, and it was 24/7 news coverage, and all of a sudden, here's COVID. You never heard another word about Hong Kong.
Mm.
And then we've got COVID coming along, and it did its thing, and all of a sudden, here's the war in Ukraine. Nothing. The whole thing just died.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, it's all about Ukraine. And now we're seeing what's happening here in Israel, and all of a sudden, this is what they use. And every time they do another one of these things, it shifts the groups of people.
That's right.
And they manipulate the groups of people. And I'm similar to yourself. I'm a bit surprised that we've got people who are in the freedom movement who have so easily been led to just forget the very principles about how the government manipulates you.
Exactly.
And what you see in the mainstream media manipulates you. And, you know, they're just jumping on new sides all of a sudden. They're going, oh, here's a whole different thing. We need to take sides here. Instead of them going, hang on, stop. Just remember what we were told with COVID, with the vaccines. They're safe and effective. And by that, they actually mean they're deadly and effective.
The opposite.
But they were lied to. We were lied to, the population. And now they're not applying that that learnt knowledge to this same thing and go, stop, question.
That's right.
Question things.
And they did apply it to the Ukraine-Russia war. A lot of people, it's unanimous throughout the freedom movement, everyone knew, saw it for what it was. No one jumped on the anti-Putin bandwagon when the Ukrainian war was happening. They didn't buy into that propaganda that Ukraine good, Putin bad. They could see that there was a lot of grey in that story. But when it comes to Israel-Palestine, they black and white, Israel's the imperialist aggressor, the Palestinians are the victims. And they repeat a lot of the talking points, ironically, that radical leftists, the Australian Greens, the Labour Party, Queers for Palestine, all these queer rainbow groups, are parroting, and they're willing to march alongside them. So they're not exercising that same caution. And I'm not telling your viewers that they should pick a side, I'm not saying that, but I'm just noting the irony that there are certain individuals, influential individuals within our movement, who have picked a side. And when you have the Greens and all these radical leftists and socialists supporting Hamas, going out on the street and repeating these same talking points, that should be a red flag. Maybe just exercise a little discernment. I'm not urging your viewers to, you know, pick to side with Israel. That's not what I'm doing, but I'm just saying, take a step back, exercise the same caution, the same discernment that you used with COVID and with the Ukraine war, and apply it to the Israel-Iran, Israel-Palestine, Israel-Gaza situation.
Exactly. And this is what we're sort of starting to see is waning a bit, you know, like people are too easily sucked into this stuff. And as I said, I don't think it's a case of standing with Israel or standing with Palestine.
Mm.
I think it's a case of standing with we the people against the perpetrators of the crimes, and the perpetrators of the crimes are the World Economic Forum and the United Nations and the World Health Organization. Those are the perpetrators. And this has always been the case. The big money people, the big bankers, they're the ones who bankroll all these wars.
That's right.
They're the ones who turn people against others. And they're the ones who are continually creating conflict.
Exactly.
And while they've got conflict, and I know we, to sort of go to an issue that I am heavily involved in, with a lot of our farmer stuff, our farmers, agricultural things that have happened here in Australia, we've had a lot of catastrophic policies that have been forced on us by government. And the first thing the government does is they'll go and find some of their leaders, bull carriers, community industry leaders in the agricultural sector, and they'll start stirring this lot up against this lot. And so as you've got them fighting each other.
It's a very effective strategy.
Works every time. And then the government just can do whatever they want. So we're seeing here, and this is the whole purpose of us talking today, I want people to understand that this is what's being done. This is not, we shouldn't be having Palestinians hating Jews and all this sort of stuff. That's not the go. What we need to understand is who is actually our enemy. And our enemy is these world people. And their governments, and whether it's your government, our government, their government, someone else's, they do not work for you. And you being we the people. They work against you, and they are constantly. They're working as a pack. They're working as a team. The UN, WEF team, the WHO team, they are all working together, and they have very, very serious intentions for us. And this is one of the main things that we need people to understand. And this is the message that we need to get out. You're not going to hear this from your mainstream media, because your mainstream media are owned by the people who are in the World Economic Forum. When you look at all your BlackRocks and your Vanguards and all these other scum, these people have bought up all the media.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got people in the media. In Australia, you've got your shocking Channel 7. Absolute disaster. Catastrophic. Your Channel 9. Your ABC. That's just
that's
a telephone.
Funded. Yeah.
That's just a TV stuff. You've got all your radio people, all your Triple M's, I remember. And don't ever forget, you hear the likes of Triple M now and they go, oh, this, and this, and people think they're very good. Remember back to when COVID first started, they started to shut down the doctors, the real doctors, who had the answers to COVID.
Mm.
They shut them down. And then they started to get very aggressive, and they were a part of the entire censorship thing. We also saw all the Facebooks and the YouTubes and the Twitters and all these other people. You know, they have their so-called fact checkers. No, mate. Your fact checkers are barefaced. They're liars.
Mm.
They are Australia hate-up liars. This is who your fact checkers are. And if you look at where these people hide out, you know, they've got some scummy, dingy cave in a university somewhere.
Yeah, RMIT. Or...
And, you know, so you're talking just extremists there.
Mm.
So,
leftist, yeah.
So, look, the whole purpose of talking here and the time we put in and why we do it is to bring this information to people, because so often people go, well, we don't hear this from anybody else. This kind of format, this kind of style, this technique, very just straight down the line, in your face, we shoot from the hip, and that's what people need to know. That's what people seem to appreciate. You know, we've got our tour coming up, our South Australian tour, coming up on the 1st of December 23. We're heading off to, we're going to go to Swan Hill and Renmark and Mildura and Adelaide, Mount Gambier, Halls Gap, you know. And this is all from what we've already done and people ringing up or contacting us going, you know, can you bring Billboard Battalion to our town? Because we really, really need to hear what you're saying and have this message, because, you know, there's nothing else going around like the messaging that we do and we deliver. And that's what people seem to be appreciating there. You know, listen, we're sick of listening to the crap. We're sick of listening to the wishy-washy stuff. You know, people who are too frightened to say this or don't want to upset someone or whatever. So that style is now really, really kicking into gear. And we've got a lot of people going, you know, Wade, we listened to you 18 months ago and we thought you're just nuts. Just a crackpot. Just, what is wrong with this bloke? He's talking about all this conspiracy stuff and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And now they're coming back going, hell yeah, we're ticking off the boxes, mate. Mm. The things you're talking about, we can see them. You know, we're seeing the bringing in of the digital ID, of the digital currency. We're seeing that places now won't accept cash. And you told us all this was going to happen. We're seeing the people who have taken this shot. We now personally know people who have died. Died suddenly, died whatever. Dead's dead.
How does that saying go? The difference between a conspiracy theory and reality is 3 months. I think that's a saying. Become a popular saying recently.
Well, I think it's fair to say that it's been a hard job because the population have been so heavily indoctrinated.
That's right.
So incredibly indoctrinated. And it's not until the hammer hits them between the eyes.
That's very unfortunate.
It is. Yeah. And very, very sadly, we're seeing casualties everywhere. You know, every day we're seeing somebody on the sporting field just
collapsing.
Super fit. Mm. You know, people who
at least you would expect.
Yes, just keeling over dead.
Mm.
And, you know, we're starting to, we're getting into doing the interview situation now, and I think it's a very, very important tool because it adds to what we bring, and it brings faces and it brings particular information to the things we talk about. So we've got people who are vax injured lined up now to start doing interviews with, and people, families of vax dead. And, you know, these people now, we need to put these stories together. I know there's a hell of a lot of interviews have been done. You know, Michael Cafe Lockdown
That's
does
right.
a terrific job. You know, I was just talking with Amber last night there, you know, Forest of the Fallen.
Amazing work, yeah.
And there's so much going on. We've got all the white crosses that the girls from Standing in the Park in Bendigo, you know, they created, and sometimes we take that with us. So people are now taking a lot of notice of the, you know, the mortality rate of people who are dying from the myocarditis, pericarditis, all the blood clots. And now, I was just talking before with one of the other doctors about all the turbo cancers. So this now is in their face. People can't ignore this stuff.
That's right.
Because they know people who it's happening to.
Mm.
And they're just seeing so much around this and this and this and this and that they can't ignore it. So it's good to see that coming to the fore, but it's really bad that it's what it is.
Exactly.
But
it was all preventable, avoidable. That's the saddest part about this whole situation.
Yes, and the most important part about it was that COVID did not just eventuate from some bats or some other thing in a wet mud.
Bogus,
all that
crap. Narrative, yeah, doesn't make sense.
So the thing is, it was a deliberate action, and I think more and more people now, just there's so much evidence, they're just going, well, I can't deny that anymore, although they want to, and I understand that. But you've got to look at what it is. And you know, I think that the medical profession, the ones who stayed there and continued to give people these needles, even though some of them will deny, oh no, it's not, but there's so much evidence to prove that it
was
deadly. So they've got to live with that, and I think that things are going to get very uncomfortable as more and more people go, well, we're going to start pointing the finger, because the medical profession, well, they're the medical profession for a reason. They're supposed to know what they're doing.
And they're supposed to serve the best interests of their patients.
That's right. And they're
pharmacists included as well, not just doctors, nurses and pharmacists too.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like, I've had a few discussions with pharmacists about this, and many of them stand on their dig, and they say, oh, well, we're just trying to save lives. No, like, by now, that ship sailed.
Mm.
You know, it's across the other side of the world now. The train left the station, and it's now a train wreck at the bottom of the canyon.
Mm.
So, and I, there's a particular chemist I keep a bit of an eye on, and right, even today, they still have pamphlets there from the Australian Pharmacists Guild, I think it is, and they're still promoting this filthy, stinking poison as being safe and effective for pregnant women. And, I mean, this is a story for another day, but just to, you know, not to detract from what we originally were talking about, but the red flags are there, the alarm bells are there, and I think at some point these, you know, we're going to have big issues where people finally, as a collective, go, hang on, you people knew. You knew. And it just reminds me of a woman I knew when all this first started, a woman in Shepparton, and was a friend of mine, you know, one of the many that you lose over what's happened. And she's a nurse, and she didn't like a lot of the stuff I was saying about how deadly this was and you should stop doing it. And to the point where she used to post every day, I vaccinated 10 people today, or I vaccinated 25 people today. And I wonder how she feels now.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
I wonder, and look, she's an extremist lefty sort of a woman and doesn't like any of the right-wing stuff. But I just wonder if she even accepts today what the ramifications of her personal actions are when so many people are arguing against it and she just continued to go for it. So, but
from my experience, a lot of people in these positions, whether they're on the low level or the high level, at least from what I've seen, don't have the capacity for introspection or remorse. And I guess with even if they did come to terms with it, maybe they'll try to brush it off, because if they do come to terms with it, then, you know, what they did is just unfathomable. It's beyond comprehension. I mean, imagine being in their shoes and then realizing, having that light bulb moment, realizing what you just did.
Exactly. And you know, we've even got people still today. You know, Michael from Cafe Lockdown talks about Dizelle, you know what I mean?
That's right, that child.
Like these surgeons, or these doctors and these nurses who sit there and deny a young girl a life-saving operation. I don't know how these people sleep at night. You know, their level of arrogance and grandioso. You know, I am God, and I will decide whether you get to live or die.
Pure evil. You're dealing with evil.
That attitude, that needs to be dealt with. I won't go too much into saying what I really feel about that. But if that happened to one of my kids, and I'm not talking about Dizelle's old man or anything like that, you know, but I don't suggest that would be a very, very good attitude to have if that was one of my kids. I don't suggest that that would be the attitude, because that might not end well at all.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody decided that they're going to play God with one of my kids, you know, and people, you know, people all over the countryside are dealing with being rejected and turned away from hospitals and all that sort of stuff. So
it's scary what's, you know, what this country has turned into, and the population has enabled it. They've allowed this to happen. The majority of the population, through their silence, through their acquiescence, through their passivity.
Yeah, I mean, they won't stand up, you know, despite. You know, where are the people that are going to stand up and fight and have a crack? I don't know. I think our Anzac spirit might be hanging by a thread. You know, I think people have had too much too easy for too long.
That's right.
And they don't realise that the freedoms and living they enjoy here, that was paid for in blood.
That's right. They've become complacent over the years, over the decades.
Just happy to just take everything and give.